assurance that my legs quit trembling and my lungs remembered how to work. I breathed him in and exhaled the terror and panic out. I thought he was going to stand there immobile and immovable, but his hold shifted from my upper arms so that one arm wrapped around my shoulders, clutching me to him almost as tightly as I was clinging to his waist, while the other moved so that one of his hands was cradling the back of my head, helmet and all. He held me to him, letting me know that if pieces started to break off, if I did indeed shatter, he was there to catch them and put them back in place. It was singularly the most important and most impactful hug of my entire life. After a few minutes of headlights hitting us and exhaust fumes choking us, I gave him one last hug for good measure and pulled back enough that I could look up and barely make out his features in the shadows. "I totally believe that it's in your best interest to keep me alive, Church. I'm having serious doubts other motorists feel the same way. That was way too close for comfort." My voice was slightly shaky, and the humor I attempted was forced at best. He gave a little nod of agreement.
"Way too close. If I hadn't been paying attention, that would have been bad. Really bad."
I appreciated the fact he didn't sugarcoat things for me. I hated the fact that he seemed to be taking some sort of responsibility for the poor driving habits of someone else when he told me,
"I shouldn't have asked you to take this trip with me. I should have just bought you a plane ticket and met you at the airport. I'm used to the risk, and I was being selfish and short-sighted, as usual."
I lifted a hand from his waist to the side of his face. His cheek was warm despite the chill from the night air around us. He also had the start of a golden scruff that made him look even more attractive, if that was possible. His jaw felt like steel under the tips of my fingers, but the curve of his bottom lip was soft as I ran the pad of my thumb over it. The touch must have startled him, because his lips opened on a soundless sigh, and his breath whispered out to touch my fingers. "I told you I am well aware of the hazards that are associated with riding motorcycles. I am intimately acquainted with all the things that can and do go wrong. My dad was a very skilled rider, and he still got hurt. Sometimes bad things happen, and all we can do is learn to adapt and work with what comes next. I knew the risks involved, and I said yes anyway." I was talking about more than the risks involved with spending endless hours on a two-wheeled death machine, and he knew it. We stared at each other in silence for a long time, until he gave a jerky nod against the fingers that were still tracing the lush outline of his very kissable mouth.
"I think we should call it good for the day. We can pull off at the next exit and find a hotel to crash in."
I nodded in agreement. "Okay." But there was something I had to know before we tempted fate by getting back on the bike. "Hey, Church?" My voice was husky and rough in the darkness that surrounded us.
"Hey, Dixie."
His always gruff voice rasped like sandpaper across my overly sensitized skin. I shifted my hand to his cheek and lifted the other one up to his thickly muscled shoulder so I could get the leverage I needed to lift myself up onto the tips of my toes to reach those delectable lips that had been calling to me since day one. He grunted a little as I leaned fully into him so that we were chest to chest and almost lip to lip. If I was going to risk my neck on the back of his bike with all the crazies out here on the road, not knowing what could happen to either of us from one moment to the next, I was going to do it knowing what it was like to kiss him. I was going to know what his mouth felt like on mine and how he tasted on my tongue. I was going to memorize every single nuance and every little sound, because when I went back to Denver, this kiss and the memory of what it felt like was going to have to last me a lifetime.
Chapter 6. Church. She kissed me. Her lips touched mine and she destroyed me. This tiny ray of light that seemed determined to chase the darkness inside of me away unraveled me, with nothing more than the brush of her very soft lips against mine. I should have pulled away. Either that or gone all in. The attraction between us was only going to end one way, with me inside of her, as we scorched through one another. So a real kiss, with tongues and teeth, and grabbing hands was inevitable, especially if she was holding the door wide open in invitation. I was already struggling with the friend thing, and this wasn't helping at all. I stood there, holding her, feeling her as she rubbed her mouth over mine, the barest hint of pressure as she took a taste, as she feathered her lips against mine like she was trying to memorize the shape, the feel, the flavor of them. It was the singularly softest touch I'd ever experienced, and yet it had the power to make my knees weak, and my blood pop with a desire so sharp it felt like it could pierce right through my skin. Her hand cradled my jaw, her fingers shaking with some of the same things I was feeling. This thing that lived between us was hungry and tired of being ignored. It buzzed around us, electric and hot, refusing to be cooled by the chill in the night air that surrounded us. If we weren't careful, the passion that was starving and needy between us would consume us, devour us, and leave us nothing more than hollow husks filled with fading satisfaction and jagged disenchantment, because no matter how good we were together, it couldn't and wouldn't last. I didn't want any part of me to be responsible for burning her out. I liked that her light chased my shadows away, and that meant I wasn't going to have any kind of hand in dimming the way she glowed. Her breasts pressed into the center of my chest as she leaned more fully into me, and I could feel the pointed peaks of her nipples stab into my skin. The sensation made my dick twitch behind my zipper and had all the available blood that was still above my belt rushing south. I'd always liked the way Dixie was built. She was on the shorter side, but every single part of her small frame was curved and lush. She looked like a woman that you could grab a hold of without having to watch yourself. She was delicate, but in no way did she come across as fragile or breakable. She looked like she could take everything I had to give her. All the pent-up longing, all the nights of frustration I spent hard and alone, all the denied hunger that made me want to eat her up and then go back for seconds and thirds, because I knew there was no way I was going to have my fill of her honeyed lips and velvety skin in one go. There was so much of her to experience, and I wanted to know what all of it felt like, tasted like, sounded like. I wanted to watch her come from every possible position I could get her in, and then I wanted to find some new ones, ones no man had ever had her in before, and watch her come in those too. Because I knew once I got her, she would let me have her in ways she hadn't let anyone else. Her eyes, so pretty and dark, made me all kinds of promises, and I wanted to take her up on every single one of them. But there wasn't anything I could promise in return, and that always kept me from crossing the invisible line. She ran the tip of her nose along the edge of my jaw, and that little nuzzle made my entire body shudder. She had the ability to bring down all the walls I had so carefully built up around us in order to keep both of us safe. She didn't have any clue the kind of damage I could do if I ignored all the warning bells ringing loudly in the back of my mind. I knew the ways in which I could wreck the women in my life that I cared about, and there was no way on God's green and often unforgiving earth that I would subject her to that. I barely survived the loss of the last woman I loved. I knew if I let Dixie sneak her way inside my heart and something happened to her, there would be nothing left of me. There wouldn't be any place left for me to run. I hated that she still had her helmet on. I wanted my hands in that wild mane of hair. I wanted to hold her close and let myself absorb how good it felt to have her in my arms after wondering how we would fit together in the dark for so long. We fit just right. She was small but mighty. She had no trouble getting herself where she wanted to be. And the side benefit of all her stretching and grabbing on to me meant that every soft and sweet part of her was pressed fully and tightly against every hard and hot part of me. Her body yielded to mine, and I swore I would never survive if it did the same thing while she was stretched out naked and wanting underneath me. It felt better than anything ever had, even though we were standing up, fully clothed on the side of a highway. There was no way my starved senses and achingly lonely soul were going to be able to withstand the sensation overload that would follow getting Dixie naked and my hands and mouth on every part of her creamy, freckled skin. The very tip of her tongue darted out and gave the center of my bottom lip a little lick. It was the best kiss I'd ever had, and it was barely a kiss at all. She fell back on her heels and gave my shoulders a little push so that I would let her go. I took a step back and used the tip of my own tongue to chase the way she tasted off my lips. Sweet. Everything about her was always so damn sweet. Her taste was going to be branded on every part of my memory long after she was gone. Just like I could feel the touch of warmth against my skin and know she had been in the room recently. She thought I wasn't aware of her. The truth was, she was the only thing I'd been aware of since getting back home and turning in my fatigues. She gave her head a little shake and blinked her eyes up at me like she was struggling to see me. A truck flew past us and blasted the horn, which made her jump and had me scowling after it as it disappeared down the road. We should probably get moving. Being parked on the side of the highway in the dark isn't much safer than riding down it. She nodded absently and waited for me to get back on the bike. When she crawled on behind me, I expected her to sit stiffly the way she had been for most of the evening. I was a little surprised when she curled into my back, and even more surprised when I felt the press of her cheek between my shoulder blade. It was nice to have a pretty girl that I had a hard on for wind her way around me and hold on like she would never let me go. The next exit was about 20 miles up the road, and luckily there was a motel that didn't look like it was a frequent site for crime scenes or used as a meth lab. So I pulled over and stopped. I wasn't sure if there was going to be an awkward talk while we discussed if we were sharing a room or not. Honestly, I was fine either way. I was used to sleeping in barracks and under the desert sky, so anything that even remotely resembled a bed was fine with me. But I never had the opportunity to ask, because she shoved her credit card at me and told me to put her room on it as she hefted her backpack over her shoulders and told me she would be at the diner across the street when I was done. I couldn't tell if she was really that hungry or if she was cutting me some slack and taking the choice and the conversation out of my hands. I went into the office, pleased that the clerk didn't look like an extra from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and secured us two adjoining rooms. Of course, I paid for both. This long overdue and overly dramatic homecoming was all of my making, so I had no intention of letting her pay for anything along the way. I already owed her more than I could ever repay. I moved the bike so that it was in front of our rooms, dropped my stuff off inside the room I decided would be mine, then made my way over to the diner. Dixie was already at a booth, a chocolate milkshake in front of her, as she chatted with a waitress, who looked tired, but was still smiling because it was impossible not to smile at the redhead when she turned that infectious grin and those big doe eyes on you. I slid in across from her and got a raised eyebrow from the waitress. Her keen gaze skimmed over me, and she turned to give Dixie a wink that made me frown. I ordered a cheeseburger without looking at the menu, and narrowed my eyes at Dixie as she stuck the straw sticking out of the frothy drink in her mouth and sucked. The way her mouth puckered and her cheeks hollowed out immediately made me think of her sucking on something else like that, which had me shifting uncomfortably on the seat and trying to discreetly adjust my jeans. Why did she wink at you before she walked away? Her tongue darted out to catch a stray dollop of whipped cream that had dotted her lip, and I had to bite back a groan. I told her I was waiting on the best-looking guy she was going to have in her section all week. She's working a double because the girl that was supposed to relieve her called in sick, and that means she had to leave her kids with their dad, who has a live-in girlfriend that is barely over 18. You walked in and proved me right. She needed something to make her smile. The waitress walked over and poured me a cup of coffee without asking if that's what I wanted. I wasn't really the smiling type, but I did manage a stiff lip twitch for her when she let her gaze roll over me. There was a twinkle in her tired eyes that I knew Dixie was entirely responsible for. She simply had that effect on everyone that crossed her path. Did I ever tell you that you remind me of someone I used to know? Someone that also thought it was her job to make everyone she came into contact with smile? I picked up the coffee and gave it a sip. It was surprisingly good. She stuck a finger in the whipped cream on the top of her drink and stuck it in her mouth. I didn't bother to hide my reaction to her innocent seduction. I could feel the heat in my gaze as I stared at her, and I watched as it made her cheeks turn pink. She was cute, but when she blushed, she was so fucking adorable that it felt unfair. You never told me much of anything, Church. Her words cut because they were true. She lifted a shoulder and let it fall. When my dad got hurt, he couldn't work anymore, and my mom was juggling a lot. She was trying to take care of him and of me and my little sister. She had to find a job, but she had been home with us for so long that she wasn't really qualified to do much besides service industry jobs. We had to downsize and move. We had to change schools. Things were really rough at home, and everyone was in a pretty bad place. I figured the least I could do was try to be the one that stayed positive about things. I've always believed that you get what you put out there in the world, and my family was putting out enough bad vibes that someone had to counteract that before karma kicked all of our asses. Sometimes it's so much easier to focus on what went wrong rather than what went right. She shrugged again. It must have worked. Dad settled into his new normal, and actually ended up being way better at staying home with us than Mom ever was. Mom got promoted at the hotel she was working at from banquet server to a conference planner, so she ended up making more than my dad did when he was working full-time. And a few years later, my sister met Wheeler, and he managed to curb some of her worst spoiled brat tendencies. Having a positive attitude and an optimistic outlook on life didn't cost me anything, and it was what my family needed from me. I guess I never stopped being everyone's cheerleader. Her chocolate gaze narrowed fractionally. Who do I remind you of? I considered her thoughtfully for a minute as her attention was stolen by the arrival of our food. She looked like a cheerleader. She looked like the kind of person that would never let you believe that you would fail. Everything about her inspired the belief that things would indeed work out the way they were supposed to. Just like the woman that had stepped up to take care of me, Jules, and my brother, after we were forced to say goodbye to my mom. Caroline was never my stepmother. She was my second mother, and her bright, positive personality was very similar to Dixie's, which was crazy considering she had also been handed some really shitty circumstances she had to work her way through while maintaining that smile. I smothered my burger in ketchup and smashed the top bun back down with my palm. Dixie did the same with hers and made a sound that I knew she would make if I ever got inside of her as she took her first bite. It made the fit of my jeans even more uncomfortable than it already was after watching her with that milkshake. My dad remarried when I was a teenager. The woman he married was a lot like you. She saw the best in everyone and in every situation. She was quick to smile and quick to forgive. She was also the reason I knew that having something good and pure in my life wasn't in the cards for me. I leaned back in the vinyl seat knowing I'd opened the door to a line of questioning I couldn't avoid forever. Talking about Caroline meant talking about my mom and how things ended so tragically with both of them. She arched her eyebrows a little bit and went back to her melting drink. Who exactly are we going to see besides the woman that fell and hurt herself? You said you swore on your mother, and now we have your second mother, so I assume we'll be crossing paths with at least some of your parents at some point in the next week. Anyone else might have been a little intimidated by that, but Dixie was likable, and she liked everyone, so I knew she would fit right in with the remaining members of my family.
What are they like?
It was an easy question, but one that I tended to dance my way around when it was asked. Typically, strangers asked it because they were wondering how I came by my unusual coloring, and they wanted me to lay out my family tree and walk them through my genetic makeup. I knew Dixie could care less what color skin and eyes the people who had made me had, and since I knew that, I had no problem trying to help her climb my complicated family tree. My mom was a beauty queen, a pretty blonde with blue eyes that wanted to be the next Miss America. She got knocked up with me her freshman year in college and was effectively disowned by her parents. The corners of my lips turned down and I couldn't stop the flare of outrage I always felt on my mother's behalf, that my grandparents were so close-minded and cold. She never told me if the reason they were so pissed was because she pretty much tanked her education and her pageant future by getting pregnant, or because she got knocked up by a guy who was biracial. It was like she was doubly defying their antiquated and racist views. He was African American, but he also had a solid chunk of Middle Eastern in him, too. He played soccer at the same school, but didn't stick around long when Mom told him she was keeping me. I'd never met the guy, but she often told me I looked a lot like him. Things were pretty rough for her when I was young. Dixie sucked in an audible breath, and I could see how deeply my words were affecting her. She was hurting for me, and I hadn't even gotten to the parts that actually wounded and left scars yet. My frown dug deeper into my face, and my hands curled tightly around the mug in front of me. My grandparents never bothered to contact either of us. Not once. Not even when she died when I was 13. I knew it was a bomb to drop, and that I should have given her that information more tactfully, but the words rushed out. I'd held them inside, never sharing them with anyone, so they took their chance to escape and fell heavily between us.
Oh, Church.
She sounded like she wanted to cry for me. I lifted a hand to hold off the rest of her sympathy. When I was 5, my mom met a guy named Julian Churchill. He's now the sheriff in Lowry, but back then he was a patrol cop, and he pulled her over for speeding. He told her he would let her go if she agreed to a date. He was totally unethical and completely illegal. But luckily, my mom liked the look of Jules, remembered him from high school, and agreed to go. It was a story they always told with smiles and shared laughs. It made me want to grin, but I knew how it all ended, and that in turn made me want to break something. I also never talked about the fact that initially I hated Jules. I hated that I had to share my mom with him. Hated that he showed up and took care of her, and that was my job. I also resented the fact she picked another man with dark skin to fall in love with. I wanted her life, and mine by association, to be easier, and without judgment and speculation, and to my immature and untried mind, it seemed like she was going out of her way to keep it hard by falling in love with someone who didn't look a whole lot like either one of us. I was too little to understand why all of that thinking was wrong, and that who my mother loved was completely out of my control. But there were a lot of years where I was nothing short of terrible to Jules. As an adult, I would like to take those actions and a lot of those words I hurled at him back. Jules is a good guy. He took me as part of the package without blinking an eye. They got married a year later, and he asked if it was cool if he could adopt me before the ink was dry on their marriage license. I remember trying not to cry when he asked me if it was all right. My mom was good. My mom and Jules together was better. No one other than my mom had ever wanted me,
In fact, I spent most of my childhood feeling distinctly unwanted. But there was Jules. Big, badass Jules. Telling me he was choosing me to be his son, despite the attitude and anger I so carelessly tossed his way. It would go down forever as one of the most significant moments in my life. They had a perfect marriage, and I thought we were a perfect family. But Mom wanted more kids and struggled to get pregnant for a long time. Jules just wanted to make her happy, so he consoled her through several miscarriages and a round of failed in vitro treatments. Right about when she resigned herself to the fact that it wasn't meant to be, she got pregnant. She called it a miracle. Really, it was a curse. I rubbed my hand over my face at the memories of how happy she was, how excited she was for the little blessing to join our family. She spent most of the pregnancy on bed rest, but it was touch and go the entire time. I remembered being scared because she seemed so weak. But the truth was, I hadn't been scared enough. Dixie's eyes were twice their normal size, and she had a shaking hand covering her mouth. She could see where my story was going, and even though I wanted it to have a different kind of ending, it didn't. She went into labor early. It was obvious something was wrong as soon as it started. There was way too much blood. And even though she didn't want me to worry, I could see how much pain she was in. I called an ambulance and Jules met us at the hospital, but it was too late. So much blood. I remembered the way it covered everything. I remembered the way I could literally see the light blink out of my mom's eyes as she told me she loved me. She told me to be a good boy for Jules and to help him take care of my little brother. She would be so disappointed to know I hadn't done either of those things. The placenta detached and she bled out. They barely managed to save my little brother's life. He was in the NICU for almost 2 months. And when he got out, Jules found himself stuck as a single dad with two kids that he never necessarily wanted and definitely wasn't prepared for. Dixie gasped and didn't bother to wipe away the single tear that escaped her eye. She looked as injured as I felt on the inside. Even after all these years, the memory sliced to the bone and left jagged tears across my soul. You have a little brother? Her voice was rough, and I could tell she was holding even more emotion back since we were in public. I nodded jerkily and rubbed my face again. Dalen. He's in high school, plays football. He has good grades, and Jules couldn't be prouder of him if he tried. The kid had worshipped every move I made when I was around, when we were younger, but I hadn't heard from him in over 2 years. I couldn't say I blamed him. You haven't seen him since he was five? The way she asked it made me feel about as low as I could, but I deserved it. I had a little brother that was well on his way to becoming a man, and I hadn't been around for any of it. I haven't seen either of them since they dropped me off at Camp Shelby for basic training. And that was something I would have to live with for the rest of my life. I was waiting for the questions about why I left and why I stayed gone, but they never came. That was Dixie, always given the benefit of the doubt. She pushed her half-eaten burger away and folded her hands on top of the table in front of her. So your dad and your brother are there. But who is the other woman you mentioned? Caroline. I grunted and felt memories and pain slide icily down my spine. Talking about my mom was hard. Talking about Caroline was harder because I was older and totally knew the way I acted while she was still alive wasn't okay. I missed my mom, but cherished every minute I'd had with her. I missed Caroline as well. But all I could think about when it came to her was regret. Caroline was one of Dalen's NICU nurses. She took care of him while he was in the hospital. She watched out for him while Jules and I buried my mom. I heard her gasp, but I couldn't look up at her. Jules spent a lot of time with Caroline while Dalen was getting healthy enough to come home. Like I said, neither one of us really knew what to do with a newborn. And Caroline stepped in to teach us the basics. I kept my gaze on my plate. It took a year or so. Dalen had just started to walk when Jules realized that he was feeling more than gratitude towards her. He asked her out on a date, and I think she'd been in love with him from the first minute she saw him hold that baby. So of course she said yes. They got married a couple of years later when Dalen was a toddler. She was a good woman, and she loved us hard. She was sick when she was younger, so she couldn't have kids of her own. But she always said it didn't matter because she had us. She was a good mom to Dalen, and I loved her because she never tried to replace my mom while she loved me. I was super lucky to have been raised by two special women. I loved her, but by the time I realized it, it was too late. I spent more time resenting her and keeping her at an arm's length because I was scared to care about someone so deeply after losing my mom. I'd also been bitter that Jules had moved on, even though he had every right to find happiness. It felt like betrayal, until Caroline left me no choice but to love her. Again, there were too many wasted minutes and moments I wanted back. Dixie's tiny hand covered mine, where they were clutched together on the tabletop, my knuckles white as I squeezed them together. "You don't have to tell me the rest if you don't want to, Church." She wanted a happy ending, and I couldn't be the guy to give that to her because I'd never experienced one myself. I had just turned 16 when she was diagnosed with breast cancer. It was the second time I saw Jules cry. She'd been in remission for years and years, but as soon as she became part of my family, as soon as I let myself love her, she got sick again. I bit out a tortured laugh and threw my head back so I was looking at the ceiling. She fought. She fought harder than I've ever seen anyone fight for anything. And I've seen war up close and personal. She didn't want to leave us, but it was no use. I watched her lose her hair when she started chemo. I watched her get skinnier and skinnier as she tried to keep taking care of us and the house. She was determined to make it to my high school graduation. She wanted to see me in my cap and gown. Dixie's hand tightened over mine, and I wasn't sure if she was trying to comfort me or herself. "Did she make it?" Her voice was so quiet I could barely hear her. I shook my head and cleared my throat as emotion threatened to choke me. She hadn't made it, because when good came into my life, it left before I could fully appreciate it. No, she didn't. Neither did I. I enlisted and was at boot camp the day after we put her in the ground. I didn't stick around for graduation. I didn't stick around for Jules or Dalen either, because they still had a shot at something good, and I didn't want to be around to taint it. She let go of my hands and leaned back in the booth, eyes wide and her chest rising and falling in shallow breaths. "Wow, is that all?" She sounded bewildered and a little baffled. Not that I could blame her. It was a lot, and none of it was particularly pleasant. "Not quite. There's Alma May." If there was one thing in the world that actually made me smile, it was Alma May. I couldn't stop my lips from twitching when I thought of the feisty older woman who had lived across the street from me for as long as I could remember. She lived down the street from me and Mom when I was growing up, and when my grandparents didn't want anything to do with us, she made sure to fill in for them. She took care of me after school when Mom worked. She helped Mom and Jules out with whatever they needed, and she was there when Dalen was a newborn and Jules was in way over his head. She always had homemade cookies and cold sweet tea ready and waiting. She is the epitome of what a proper Southern lady should be. And she taught me more about family and forgiveness than anything or anyone else has. Her head cocked to the side, and she considered me thoughtfully. "Why couldn't you tell them the truth, Church? Why couldn't you just say you weren't ready to come home yet? Surely they would understand." It was a reasonable question, but my reasons for not doing exactly that were anything but. I never told them when I was promoted into Spec Ops. I always let them think I was still in infantry, or that I was doing guard duty. When I went in, I was an MP for the first few years, so I let everyone back home keep right on thinking that I was still doing nothing more than watching the gates at the base and regulating unruly soldiers. I didn't want them to worry. Everyone had suffered enough loss, and I didn't want anyone to lose any sleep wondering where I was and what I was doing. So no one back home knows how desperately I really needed the downtime. They have no clue that I came back a different man than they remember. I carried a lot of heavy shit around inside of me, and there was no way the people that loved me were going to miss the way I was weighed down. I blinked at Dixie, realizing in the 20 minutes or so we had been talking that I had given her more, shared more with her, than I had with anyone since I left home. Not even Rome knew the reason I kept communication to a minimum back home was for them and not for me. She made a face at me. You should be honest with them. They'll understand. They would, but the way I left, the way I shut myself off from them, and the grieving and healing we should be doing together, that was going to be harder for them to forgive and understand. Are you ready to go? I want to get on the road pretty early in the morning, and I know you aren't exactly the type that likes to rise and shine. There was also only so much of my heart and soul that I was willing to show her at one time. Turned out I had a lot to say when I was talking to someone that looked at me the way she did. I hated feeling this exposed and raw. I knew the sun could burn when you let it shine on your unprotected skin for too long. That's what it felt like after giving Dixie so much, and having her still look at me like I was something special. She nodded, and made like she was going to reach for her wallet, but I waved her off, and tossed a couple of bills on the table, sure to leave a tip that would make the waitress having to stay late sting a little less. I slid out of the booth, but almost fell back into it when Dixie suddenly launched herself at me. I wasn't used to being hugged. It wasn't something that happened when you kept everyone at an arm's length and made sure that a scowl was your default expression. Her arm circled my waist, and her cheek rested right over my heart as she squeezed me tight. I curled an arm around her shoulders and let the fingers of my free hand twist and twine in the endless curls that cascaded down her back. They felt like silk as they wrapped around my knuckles and tickled my palm. What's this for? I wasn't surprised that she was a hugger, but I was surprised that she was hugging me for no apparent reason. That wasn't the type of relationship we had. At least it hadn't been before she gave me that kiss that I could still taste and feel. It's for the little boy that lost both his moms, and for the man that hasn't seen his family in a decade. No one should go through the things you've been through without a hug, Church. Everyone needs one every now and then. Even big, badass former soldiers. I couldn't remember the last time someone had hugged me. It might have been Jules and Alma May when they dropped me off for basic, because I sure as hell wasn't into hugging the women I took to bed, or the men I'd been deep in the trenches with. I hugged her back, but it was awkward and stiff. I wanted my arms around her for something other than comfort. We broke apart and headed for the doorway. The waitress gave a wave from where she was standing behind the counter. You were right, darling. He is pretty, but he does need to smile more. You two have a good night. Dixie laughed and pushed the door open. And since her back was to me, she didn't see it, but almost very nearly did smile. It was impossible not to around her.
Chapter 7. Dixie. The knock on my door came way too early the next morning. I tried to go to bed almost immediately after getting into the room and taking my long-awaited shower, but my body was far too used to being awake late into the night and sleeping when the sun was in the sky. Not to mention, I couldn't stop my mind from spinning pretty fairy tales around that taste of Church I had snuck on the side of the road. I was stupid to think a single kiss was enough to satisfy the way I had been craving him since the beginning. I wanted more. I wanted it all, and the way his big body tightened and shivered against mine was a pretty big indication that he was willing to give me what I desired. But the look in his eyes warned that it was only physical on his end. He would give me every single thing I asked for, except for a way into that heart he guarded with iron bars and bulletproof armor. I also couldn't stop thinking about what was waiting for us when we got to Mississippi. His story hurt to hear. I hated the idea of him feeling unwanted, and I couldn't believe anyone could ever look into those beautiful eyes and consider his mother's choice to keep him and raise him a mistake. I knew there was more to why he hadn't been home in so long than him needing a break once he got out of the service. I watched church with Rome and Asa. I watched him with the other guys that filtered in and out of the bar that made up the tightly knit family that had surrounded and supported Rome when he was going through his own adjustment period after coming home from the desert. Church might think he was a lone wolf, but it was obvious to me that what he actually was an alpha in search of his own pack to lead. He missed the camaraderie of having a band of brothers. He missed being a part of a group of like-minded individuals that would watch out for each other come hell or high water. He still had that bond with Rome, but for reasons that I didn't understand and was more determined than ever to figure out, he held himself aloof and apart from anyone else willing to welcome him into their fold, his family included. I tossed the covers off the bed and made my way to the door, blurry-eyed and rumpled. When I pulled it open, Church was on the other side, looking like he had been awake for hours. He even had a white to-go cup of coffee in his hand, and something in a paper bag that smelled heavenly.
"I sent you a text when I got up, but obviously you didn't get it."
He sounded amused, and I realized his gaze wasn't on my sleep-tangled hair or my practically naked lower half. No, he was focused on the words, "Tequila made me do it," where they stretched across my chest on the long tank top I'd worn to bed the night before. I shoved my hands through my hair, not thinking that the motion would pull the hem of my shirt up well past my waist, giving Church an unobstructed view of my underwear. I blushed, but took solace in the fact that this time they were at least cute and lacy. I tugged the end of the shirt back down so that I was barely covered, and took a step back into the room. "I need to get dressed and do something with my hair. Give me half an hour and I'll be ready to go. My sister called me no less than 20 times last night, so I had to turn my phone to silent. That's why I didn't get your text." I fisted my hair in a hand and lifted the snarled mess up off my neck. I shouldn't have gone to bed with it wet. There was little to no chance that I was going to be able to wrangle the curls into any kind of order. I thought he would take the hint and head back to his own room. Instead, he walked farther into mine and placed the coffee and paper bag on the dresser where the TV sat. He made himself comfortable on the edge of my unmade bed and crossed his long legs at the ankle while he watched me with amused eyes.
"Everything okay back home?"
The genuine concern in his honeyed voice had more heat working its way through my body. I spun on my heel, snatched up my jeans from the day before, grabbed my bra from where it was dangling on the bathroom door handle, and slid inside the little room so I could put some layers on between me and the walking, talking seduction that was Dash Churchill. Wheeler told her the wedding is off. He also told her she has until I get back home to find somewhere else to live. Callie hasn't ever kept a full-time job and has never had to support herself, so she's freaking out. Also, my parents invested a lot of time and money into their wedding, and she's panicking that Wheeler is going to tell them the reason he's walking away is because she cheated on him. She's always been the baby, the one they coddled, but they love Wheeler like a son, so it's going to be bad. I wiggled into the rest of my clothes and finger-combed my hair. It was useless. The curls had taken over my head, and they wouldn't be stopped. I stuck my toothbrush in my mouth and looked at him in the mirror. He was watching me with hooded eyes, and there was tension in his shoulders and arms that wasn't there when he walked in. He looked like he had been cast in bronze by a great artist that wanted to capture what true masculine beauty was all about. He was so strong and hard, but there was no denying that he was also all kinds of gorgeous and flat-out dazzling.
"Why do you think your sister stepped out on him?"
I ran my tongue over my now clean teeth and wasn't surprised one bit that instead of minty freshness, I still tasted him. I was certain I was going to taste him forever, and that it was going to slowly drive me insane. I trapped my hair in pigtails on either side of my head, which made me look like I was 12 years old. Well, a 12-year-old with some serious cleavage. I made a face in the mirror as I slathered on some tinted moisturizer and some chapstick. I figured it would be wind in my face and more truck stops today, so there was no need for me to doll myself up. Besides, today was the second morning in a row church had seen me the way I was when I woke up, so there was no putting lipstick on a pig after that. I figured he couldn't be too repulsed by my au naturel state if he hadn't run out the door yet, and I tingled when I remembered that he'd told me he thought I was cute when I was all grumbly and growly in the morning. Who cares why she did it? Wheeler is a good guy, and this is the second time she's had no regard for how her actions will hurt him. There is no excuse that can justify what she's done. And I told her the same thing in no uncertain terms last night. I was pissed at her, and her tears and woe-is-me attitude over a situation of her own making only served to make me angrier as I talked to her. Eventually, I'd had to hang up on her, which hadn't stopped her from calling or texting me well into the wee hours of the morning. Church lifted an eyebrow at me as I made my way to where he had stashed the breakfast goodies. I wasn't fully awake yet, but my stomach sure was. I didn't hold back a delighted squeal when I found frosted donuts in the paper bag. I was going to need to figure out a way to fit a treadmill in my apartment after all of this road trip food, but I wanted to eat now and worry about my ass later.
Seems to me if she isn't typically a bad person, then there is more to why she did what she did than her getting tired of the same cock. There's usually a reason why good folks do bad things.
He was watching me carefully, and I felt like his somber words were some kind of warning I was supposed to heed. I popped a sugary sweet bite of dough into my mouth and chewed while we stared at each other. It tasted like heaven, and the jolt of sugar was enough to kick my sluggish system awake. I don't care what her reason is. I care that she hurt someone I care about, and I'm pissed that she was only thinking of herself, not how her actions could affect the rest of the people in her life that love both her and Wheeler. I sounded sharp and slightly petulant, but I didn't care. I couldn't imagine Callie saying anything to me that would make the circumstances she had set in motion okay. I didn't care where her head was at while she was carrying on behind Wheeler's back. All I cared about was that her thoughts hadn't been on the man that had given her everything, or the family that had claimed him as one of their own. Church lumbered to his feet and ran a hand over his closely cropped hair. His eyes were serious and intent as he told me,
"Her reasons might not matter to you, but they could be everything to her. Sometimes people make choices that hurt other people, because they feel like it would hurt the people they care about even more if they didn't make that choice."
I cocked my head to the side as the chocolate frosting from my donut started to melt all over my fingers. "Are we still talking about my sister, Church?" I wondered if he was trying to explain why he had felt compelled to stay away from home for so long in a roundabout way.
"We're just talking, Dixie. That's what friends do."
He looked at me, intensity and things I couldn't decipher burning bright in his brilliant eyes, as he made his way to the door.
"Finish your breakfast. I want to see if we can get to at least the Arkansas border today."
I licked along the side of my thumb and heard him suck in a sharp breath. I grinned at him and nodded. "Thanks for breakfast. Chocolate is my favorite." He gave me another look, this one followed by a smirk, and then disappeared out the door with a snort. He didn't smile, but there was definitely a lip twitch involved. I would take what I could get and consider the almost grin a win for the morning. He was already on the bike with the motor running when I made my way to the parking lot. I had the leathers on so I wouldn't have to take any unnecessary trips to scary bathrooms, and he tilted his chin in approval. He had on mirrored sunglasses, so I couldn't see his eyes anymore, but something instinctively told me that he more than liked the way the leather covered my legs and framed the part of me that fluttered and went damp as soon as I put a hand on his rock-hard shoulder so I could get the leverage I needed to climb on behind him. By the end of this trip, I was going to be nothing more than one giant orgasm waiting to happen. He was going to accidentally brush up against me, and I was going to make a fool of myself as all that desire finally burst out, unable to be contained. I was bound to look like Meg Ryan in When Harry Met Sally, only my public climax was going to be very real, because there was no faking that he'd turn me on and inside out. I chuckled at the image, which had Church whipping his head around to look at me questioningly. I shook my head and smiled at him. There was no way I was going to pass along the information that all it would take for him to turn me into a sexual time bomb was the touch of his hands. Something told me he would use that intel to his advantage. His eyebrows winged up so that I could see them over the rims of his sunglasses, but he turned back around and guided us back onto the highway. We had a long way to go, both in miles and in what it was going to take for Church to actually find his way back home, and there wasn't any time to waste. Kansas was a straight shot, and I made it almost all the way through the entire state before we had to stop. This time Church wouldn't let me out of his sight, so I had to go to the bathroom while he waited outside the door. I wanted to tell him it was overboard, but honestly I felt better knowing I could do my thing without worrying about what was happening beyond the closed door. The truck stop had a diner attached to it, so we stopped for lunch and he ordered a steak that was the size of my head. When I questioned him, he said he was used to a high-protein diet, and that typically he worked out enough that he needed the fuel. I was already burned out on all the greasy food we'd been eating, so I tried to order a salad. Unfortunately, the only salad they offered was driven towards trucker taste, so it came in a fried tortilla bowl with taco meat, cheese, and sour cream on it. It was really good, but I could feel the waistband of my jeans getting tighter with each bite. I was rumbling about calories and the lack of healthy options on the menu when Church cut me off with a raised hand and a furious scowl.
"Do you like the way you look?"
His sharply spoken question surprised me into silence. I nodded slowly and mumbled, "I do. I mean, my hair can be a pain in the ass, and when I was younger I hated having freckles everywhere. But for the most part I know I'm pretty cute." He nodded at me, and his scowl turned into a leer.
"You are very fucking cute. There is something to love about all women, no matter what form they take. So eat your salad and enjoy your chocolate donuts. If a man can't appreciate what's right in front of him, then he isn't a man that was raised right, and he doesn't deserve a taste of that sweet skin, no matter how much or how little of it there may be."
I was so stunned by his words that I let my fork fall back into my very unhealthy salad with a click. "Wow, I don't think you've ever said so many words in a row before." Minus last night, when he was filling me in on his tragic family dynamics. "Leave it up to you to pick some of the best words I've ever heard to be the ones you go with when you decide to finally venture into small talk." He made a noise that might have been a laugh low in his throat.
"I grew up not being white enough for the white kids, and not black enough for the black kids. I had grandparents that wouldn't acknowledge me and a mother that looked like a supermodel, but dressed and lived like she was an orphan. Because she pretty much was after she had me. She had a baby with one guy of color and then married another one, even after she knew firsthand how difficult interracial relationships could be in the South. As far as we've progressed as a nation when it comes to acceptance, there is still a long, long way to go. You gotta like the way you look, because how you look tells your story. And fuck anyone that doesn't want to appreciate that."
I was stunned into silence, so all I could do was gape at him with my mouth hanging open. I looked ridiculous, but I couldn't get my head around someone as gorgeous and as perfectly built as he was ever being anything other than admired and sought after. Even now, in this nowhere truck stop, every pair of female eyes was on him, and some of the men couldn't look away either. Not all of the male attention was admiring. Truck stops in the middle of nowhere, the farther south we went, meant more and more narrow-eyed looks and tight-lipped scowls were sent his way. They seemed even worse when we walked side by side, and when he put his hand on my lower back to usher me into the booth across from him.
I can't believe anyone could ever look at you and not want the story behind those eyes. You're beautiful."
He was, but it was the hardness in his face and the scars that dotted his arms and that peeked out of the collar of his shirt that begged to tell their tale.
"Sometimes all people can see is what's different, but those differences are what make us who we are. For instance, you might fight with your hair, but I've never met anyone else whose hair I want my hands in all the time. It's soft, and I like the way it feels when your curls don't want to let me go. I like that you look a little bit like a lion when you get up in the morning, even though I know you're a pussycat. And don't even get me started on the freckles.
He gave me a look that clearly indicated he would like to find out exactly how many I had and where they stopped. The answer was a lot, and they didn't. I had them all over. So if he wanted to find them all, he was going to be a very, very busy man. Can you just keep talking? I've always liked your voice, but it's even better when you're saying such amazing things. It really was. I fell for him in an instant when he went out of his way to make sure I was okay. I knew then that he was it for me. But now that he was letting me actually know him, it stung even more to realize that my heart had chosen wisely, even though his still couldn't see what was standing right in front of him. He was a good guy, smart and resilient. I didn't want anyone to ever look past how amazing and important he was again. We finished lunch in relative silence after, and I wasn't surprised when he appeared to be done talking for the day. He had used up his daily allotment of words to make sure I knew that he liked the way I looked, and that I should like the way I looked just as much. In his own subtle way, he also addressed the fact that he wasn't oblivious to the stares and side-eyed looks coming from the people in the truck stop that weren't interested in his story. He knew they were there. He just didn't care. I wanted to kiss him again. Instead, I climbed back on the bike behind him and settled in as we pushed our way through Kansas City and all the way through Missouri until we both agreed it was time to stop, right before we hit the Arkansas border. We would roll into Lowry late tomorrow afternoon at the pace we were going, which worked well since Elma May was due to go home from the hospital the following afternoon. The ride today had gone much smoother than the hours spent on the asphalt last night. There weren't any almost accidents, and we were lucky that the weather had stayed temperate and dry. I needed to stretch my legs and work out some of the numbness in my backside when we stopped. Church found a tiny little place that looked like it was a bunch of individual cabins for us to spend the night. Unfortunately, there was a celebration happening in town called the Ozark Festival, so there was only a single room available for the night. The entire town was packed with tourists in for the event, and it was one of the only vacancies. The festival brought in people from all over the Ozarks and was a pretty big deal. The guy that handed us the room key mentioned we should plan on waiting if we headed out for dinner anywhere. I did a quick search on my phone to see if there were any other options and came up with nothing unless we wanted to ride another 50 miles down the highway. I wasn't sure how I was going to manage sharing a bed with him and keeping my hands to myself, but I was a grown-up and told myself I could make it through one night unscathed. Maybe. I need a beer, and maybe a shot, or three. Definitely more than one if I was going to lie next to that big, hard body all night and not touch. I could drink until I blacked out, ensuring I would keep my hands to myself and not whisper into the dark all the ways my heart longed for him. We drove past a couple bars when we pulled into town that are within walking distance. Want to grab a drink?
I'm not sure that's the best idea.
He sounded gruff and leery of my plan. Come on, it'll be fun. I promise your virtue, and the rest of you is safe with me. I smiled at him and reached out so I could grab his hand. I started walking towards the road, thinking he would oblige me, but was pulled up short when his massive frame didn't budge an inch.
It's not my virtue I'm worried about. It's all those Confederate flags hanging out of the back of the pickup trucks parked out front.
I paused and frowned at him over my shoulder.
I'm used to not being safe. It's you I would worry about.
That wasn't something I even noticed, but I wasn't surprised he had, and his words had my tummy twisting into knots. Every single time he mentioned keeping me safe or taking care of me, it made that thing I knew, that knowledge I had that he was it for me, settle deeper into my bones. It made me want to kick myself for wasting a second on those stupid dating apps. I couldn't trick my stubborn heart into thinking there was a substitute for the man that didn't want it. When the heart knew, it just knew. Okay, well, I guess we can find a liquor store and have happy hour in our room. I didn't want to put him in a situation where he was uncomfortable or unappreciated. He was a lot bigger than me, but I really wanted to shield him and protect him from some of that ugliness that he'd experienced throughout his life. He grunted and gave his head a shake.
No, let's just go to the bar. I'll be fine. And I'll make sure you're fine.
Something in his tone told me that it probably wouldn't be fine, and he was lying through his teeth. Really, I just want a drink. I don't care where it comes from. I yelped as his fingers curled around mine, where I was holding him, and he started to march up the side of the road, practically hauling me along behind him. There was no way I could keep up with his long-legged gait, so I ended up almost having to jog to keep pace with him.
I haven't been around the good old boys in a long time. It's probably good to have a refresher course before we hit Lowry, and it can't hurt anything for you to see what you very well might be up against when we cross into the city limits. Jules used to have to come and get me from school for fighting all the time. Now he'd have to come get me out of jail if someone rubbed me the wrong way.
I tried to pull him to a stop so I could urge him to go back to the cute little cabin with me, but now he was a man on a mission. I wasn't sure if he was trying to teach me a lesson or prove something to himself, but either way, it wasn't exactly a pleasant experience. All I wanted was a drink, not to be caught in the middle of one of his memories or a bad memory in the making. I felt him stiffen the minute we pushed through the doors. I saw his back go bored straight, and the way his shoulders braced, like the ceiling was going to fall down around us. I couldn't see his face, but I knew that if I could, the expression on it would be fierce enough to keep anyone from venturing too close to us. However, as we walked farther inside the honky-tonk, it was clear the loud country music wasn't going to stop playing. None of the patrons stopped the conversations they were having, and the bouncer sitting at the door, much like Church did at my bar, didn't flick an eyelash or even shift his weight. The only person that seemed to care about us at all was the blonde cocktail server in shorts that were way too short, who swung by and told us there was a table in the back if we wanted to sit down. She apologized for the crowd, mentioned the festival, and told me she liked my tank top after mentioning they had a 2-for-1 special on Patron. I ordered a round before we sat down and gave Church a look from under my eyebrows as he sat sulkily and silently across from me, eyes darting around the room, like he was waiting for a confrontation that didn't seem like it was in any hurry to find him. The waitress smiled at him exactly the same way I would if I was the one dropping off his bourbon. Lots of teeth, lots of eye contact, and enough of an invitation that I was now also scowling. She hurried about to take care of the rest of her tables as Church's gaze found its way back to mine. I let the silence drag on through the first 2 shots, but by the time the blonde brought the 3rd, I had settled enough that I was brave enough to ask. So I take it this isn't your usual experience in a place like this. I tossed the 3rd shot back and chased it with a swig of beer. My head was starting to get a little fuzzy, and my limbs a little loose. He picked up his glass and gave the amber liquid a little taste, his multicolored eyes seeming to swirl together like an abstract painting.
Been in a lot of places around the world. I learned you never know what to expect when you walk into any place not looking much like the locals.
I frowned a little bit and looked at the salt I had poured on the back of my hand I'd used to chase my tequila shot with. I made a face as I sucked on a slice of lime. That sounds exhausting. Being on alert all the time, always waiting for the other shoe to drop. That doesn't sound like much fun. He grunted at me.
Fun doesn't have anything to do with it.
He didn't sound bitter about the fact, just matter of fact and resigned. It was the way it had always been for him, and he didn't expect it to be any different, no matter where he was.
If you don't plan for the worst, and you're caught with your ass hanging out in a bad situation, there is no one to blame but yourself. Especially if you know firsthand how bad it can get.
I lifted an eyebrow at him and licked my lips. What about plan for the worst, but expect the best? Why can't you have a plan for if it goes bad, but go into a situation ready to experience all the good things it may have to offer? He made a noise low in his throat and picked up his drink so that it covered his lickable lips.
I know my way around bad like the back of my hand. Good, not so much.
I ordered another round of shots and glared at him as he lifted his eyebrows questioningly at me.
Are you having a liquid dinner tonight?
He smoothly changed the subject, and I noticed that his attention was now squarely on me, and not on searching out hidden danger. I pointed a finger at him, and realized it was less than steady. We're sharing a bed, and that means I'm drinking enough that I'll be too hammered to do anything inappropriate in my sleep, and if I do get clingy, I'll be too drunk to remember it in the morning. There it went again, that little lip twitch that was trying so hard to be a smile.
You don't have to share the bed if you don't want to. I can sleep on the floor. Believe me, I've laid my head down in worse places.
I groaned and put my face in my hands. I do want... That's the problem. He chuckled at me and pulled the shot I still hadn't taken out of my hand.
How about we play a game? And if you win, then I'll give you back your shot.
I pouted at him and crossed my arms over my chest. What kind of game? I worked in a bar and had for a long time. If he thought he could beat me at pool, darts, quarters, or any of the other common barfly games I was constantly surrounded by, he had another thing coming, even if I was well on my way to a pleasant buzz.
Let's play two truths and a lie. You tell me three things, two that are true and one that's a lie, and I have to pick the lie out. If you win, you get your drink, and if I pick the lie, then we get to go.
He sure did seem like he was in a big hurry to get back to the room we had to share, but my brain was a little bit too fuzzy to pick up on the heat in his eyes and the sexy twist of his lips. Fine, I'll play. I was a terrible liar, so there wasn't a chance in hell he wasn't going to win. I tapped my fingers on the table in front of me and narrowed my eyes on his in concentration. Two truths were easy. It was the lie I was struggling with. I held up a finger and smirked at him. Number one, is the first boy that I ever kissed ended up being gay. He was beautiful and it broke my heart when I found out. Number two, I am not a real redhead. All of this, I picked up one of my poofy pigtails and let it fall, is fake. His eyebrows danced up and I saw his gaze sharpen on me in the dim light offered up by the neon glow surrounding us. I could tell he was trying to see if I had roots showing or not. But I just smiled at him and held up a third finger. Third, I've been calling my vibrator Church for the last 6 months. It never had a name before, but since I've practically burned the thing out since you came to town, it only seemed fitting I named it after you. He almost dropped his glass. His eyes flared to life in a way I had never seen before, and those lips that were made to kiss and to whisper dirty, sexy things in the dark parted as a breath wheezed out of him.
Jesus, Dixie.
My name sounded like the direst word he could think of, and at the same time like something decadent and sweet he wanted to indulge in. It was my turn to lift my eyebrows and smirk. I pointed at the shot he was still holding captive. You were the